Good afternoon. It's my pleasure to come here and talk to you about biometrics. Actually, the word biometrics has its origin in two Greek words, bios, which means life, and metron, which means a measure. So it's basically a measure of life. And given the theme of this conference, computing life, it's quite appropriate that we talk about biometrics, because you cannot compute life unless you first measure life. So why are we interested in doing these measurements on a person or a living person? And the reason is we want to find out what makes a person unique. And the reason for doing that is so that we can unlock our phone, and only we can unlock the phone and nobody else. And that is the reason why iPhone 5S and iPhone 6 have a fingerprint-based unlocking mechanism, and the Android phones have a face-based unlocking mechanism. So that's the purpose of my talk. There is a great progress which has been made in biometrics. Since 100 years ago, fingerprints have been used by all the police agencies in the world to recognize, identify criminals and solve crimes. But now we see the use of fingerprints in a device as common as a mobile phone. And I think this trend will continue, and we will see more and more use of biometrics in our daily lives. So what I would like to do is just to introduce why there is so much excitement about biometric recognition. What is biometrics? How do we design a recognition system? What are the research opportunities for the students here? And where is the field of biometrics heading? So let's start out with a very simple example of a transaction which most of us do every day. So if you want to withdraw money from an ATM in a bank, you have to do two things. You insert a card and you have a six-digit PIN in China. In the United States, the PIN is only four digits. But the machine does not know who is inputting the card and who is inputting the PIN. The card could have been stolen and the PIN could be easily guessed, as you can see from the next slide. The most common six-digit PIN in China is all six zeros. The next most common is six ones. So people do not use a very complicated PIN number because often they forget. Or even if they use some non-random or very personal PIN number, it is usually related to either their date of birth or some other personal information. And here we see an example of stolen or duplicate ATM cards, which was shown on the CCTV in China. So it is for this reason that a bank in Lanzhou in the Gansu province started introducing a finger vein system to do the person recognition. So you can operate this machine in two different ways. You enter a card, you enter a PIN number, and put your finger on the reader, which will not measure the fingerprint, but the finger vein, which is the vessel pattern inside the finger skin. Or you can also operate this machine by using finger vein only. So now you don't need to carry a credit card with you, and you don't have to worry about a PIN number. And so you can either have a three-factor authentication, card, PIN, and a biometric, which in this case happens to be finger vein, or you can just use it with the finger vein. The other example I want to give you about the common transactions which all of us do is using a credit card to make any purchases in a store. Recently in the United States, in fact, almost every month or every week, we see a story in the newspaper where some merchant or a bank has lost the data of a large number of customers. But this was one of the largest data breaches. J.P. Morgan is one of the largest banks in the United States. And they said that the data belonging to 83 million customers was stolen. And what did this data contain? It's a lot of personal information about you, your credit card number, your name, your address, and in some cases, your social security number. And what is interesting is that as soon as the data is stolen, 88% of the stolen data was used within a few minutes. That is, somebody started using that stolen credit card number to make some purchases. And so in order to stop that, this is where the Apple Pay, which was announced last week, is going to play a major role. So now your fingerprint is the password, and without your fingerprint, you cannot do any transaction. So the idea of this Apple Pay system and other systems like that is that at the point of sale, you do not hand over any credential, no credit card, no other method of certifying who you are. There is a NFC near field communication unit at the pay register, and you bring the mobile phone in close proximity to the NFC, and then you put your finger on the home button where there is a reader there, and based on that fingerprint reader, your identity is confirmed and the transaction is completed. And the credit card information is not transmitted to the merchant, just a one-time transaction code is issued, and so this protects your credit card information. Now, the mobile payment is a huge activity which is extremely common in many parts of the world, and here I'm showing you an example of M-Pesa system in East Africa, in Kenya and in Tanzania, where people do not have access to the banks. They rely on the local merchants who act as a surrogate banks. And so the people use the mobile phone to deposit, withdraw, and transfer money using their mobile phones. So anything which we can do with the mobile in terms of transaction, that activity is going to grow. The world population is about 7.3 billion, and approximately 4.5 billion individuals have mobile phones, and this number keeps growing. And a large percentage of the new mobile phone sales are the smartphones. So now let's talk about moving from the financial transaction, let's talk about the security threats. Interpol is a international police agency, and it reports that it has data on 40 million lost or stolen travel documents. And these documents include passports, visas, and any other kind of travel documents. That means these travel documents can be easily stolen, and once they are stolen, they can be used in two different ways. Somebody can put a different type of picture in it, change the name, and so on. So now you have a valid passport which can be used by somebody else. And here is an example of a Chinese ID card. On the left, you see the real ID card, and on the right, you see an ID card which has been forged based on the ID card shown on the left. There were 19 hijackers who were involved in the 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States, known as the 9/11 attacks. And many of the 19 hijackers had multiple driver licenses issued by different states in the United States. So the documents which we carry to prove who we are cannot be trusted anymore. And it is for this reason that after the 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States, the Department of Homeland Security started collecting fingerprints of all the visitors to the United States. So now, any visitor coming to the United States has to provide all the 10 fingerprints. And it's collected in four, and then two thumbs. So it's called the 442 reader. And the purpose of collecting these fingerprints are twofold. Number one, the Homeland Security Department maintains a database of wanted people, person of interest, and these fingerprints are matched in real time to this database, which could be 500,000 or 1,000,000. And within a few seconds, while you are talking to the immigration agent, the system decides whether you are on the wanted list or not. The second purpose is, if you were issued a visa in Beijing to come to the United States, you have to provide your fingerprints. And then when you land in the United States at the airport, they want to make sure that the person who is entering with that visa is actually the person who was issued the visa at the Beijing consulate. So there are two purposes of taking the fingerprints at the border crossing. So now in the United States, all the border crossing, air, land, and sea, all have the fingerprint acquisition system. So what is biometrics? As I mentioned, it is basically making measurements on life. So this cartoon aptly illustrates what we are doing. We want to take all possible measurements on the human body. Of course, it's simply said than done. Typically, we rely on only certain measurements which can be easily made, like fingerprint, face, iris of the eye. And the goal is to come up with a unique key specific to that person. That's the ultimate goal of biometric recognition. You now have a key which is intrinsic to your body rather than some externally assigned identity, which could be in the form of an ID card or driver license and passport. So now we can recognize a person based on the body traits rather than ID card or the PIN number. So these are the commonly used biometric traits which have been proposed and used. Fingerprints and face are the two most commonly used biometric traits, but the use of iris is increasing. There are systems based on the palm vein, systems based on palm prints, shape of the hand, speech, scar marks and tattoos, finger vein I already showed you in the bank in Gansu, and the signature. But the three most important body traits based on which you can do some kind of what we will call deduplication are fingerprint, face, and iris. But the use of biometrics is not known, is not new. If you look at your palm of your hand and the bottom of your feet, the skin characteristics is quite different from the skin characteristics on the rest of your body. And these are referred to as dermatoglyphics or finger friction-rich patterns. So there are these engravings on the finger skin, on the palm skin, and at the bottom of your feet. And so people have been curious about these markings for a long time, but they didn't know that they could be used to identify an individual uniquely. So in many of the ancient pottery, the artist, after he made the specimen, they put the seal based on their thumbprint. And not only that, in many villages in India, and also in many of the old legal documents, people who could not sign their name put their thumbprint as a method of indicating their seal of approval on the document. So how can we process a fingerprint and do the recognition based on that? That is, what measurements can we extract from the fingerprints themselves to do the processing? Because you cannot use the raw image itself to do the matching. So first of all, at the higher level, all fingerprints can be classified into three broad categories: arch, loop, and whorl. So if you look closely at your fingerprint, you will see that the pattern can be one of these three types. And the loop can be a left loop or the right loop. And the whorl is often referred to as a double loop. And the way to tell them apart is the presence of singular points, what are called core and delta. So these patterns are essentially a flow pattern where the ridges are flowing in some specific orientation. And whenever the orientation changes, that gives a point of singularity. So these points of singularity are shown as the red circle and blue triangles. In the arch, there is no singularity. In the loop, you have one core and one delta. And in the double loop, you have two cores and two delta. And they always appear in pairs. So that's at the high level. You can do a three-class classification of the fingerprints. Then at the finer level, in order to do the matching and to verify that it is indeed you, we look at the points where the ridges abruptly end or the ridges bifurcate. These are points of bifurcation and points of ridge ending. And typically in a fingerprint, we have 100 such points. Of course, the number of points varies depending on how you form the impression, the condition of your finger. Some of the points may be spurious because of the cuts and bruises on your skin. But typically, there is a large number of points, 100 points. And fingerprint matching is nothing but the problem of point matching. Given two fingerprints, we extract these minutiae points. Some of them are ridge ending, some of them are ridge bifurcations. And we essentially find the correspondence between these two sets of points. And if we can find enough correspondences, then we say that these two fingerprint impressions came from the same source or from the same finger. So that's the whole idea of fingerprint matching. Scotland Yard first used fingerprints for catching criminals in 1905, almost 100 years ago. FBI started collecting the data of fingerprints in 1924. And now a police agency in every country in the world, including China, uses fingerprint for identifying criminals. So this is typically, on the left side, you will see what is called a fingerprint card. This is what the data is collected when somebody is arrested and taken to a police station. The top two rows are what is called the rolled print. Ink is applied to your finger. A police officer will hold your finger and roll it from left to right. It's called nail-to-nail impression. And in the bottom row is that impression 442, and that's called the slap fingerprints. And the reason they collect both is basically to make sure that the correct ordering has been followed while you capture the fingerprints. So there is a sequencing order in which you collect the fingerprints so that you match a correct finger to a correct finger. Of course, now these days with the advances in sensor technology, we no longer apply ink to the finger. There is a glass platen on which you put your finger and an impression is taken from that. On the right side, we show a partial fingerprint. If you like to see the crime show TV dramas like CSI, you will often see examples of these fingerprints, in this case found on a bank check. So it's a partial fingerprint. And one of the most commonly used methods to identify the suspect of a crime is by taking that partial fingerprint and searching against the database, in this case of 70 million criminals in the FBI database, and finding who left that impression or which finger left that impression at the crime scene. And this is a laborious task because this is a very difficult problem. Matching a full print to full print is a fairly accurate system, and I'll show you some accuracies, but using all 10 fingerprints, we can have an accuracy of over 99.99%. So why is use of fingerprints so common and has sustained over the past 100 years? So the first assumption for any biometric trait is uniqueness. That are the fingerprints unique? And the first question people ask is, do identical twins have different fingerprints or the same fingerprints? It turns out identical fingerprints have different fingerprints. And the reason is because fingerprint formation happens in about 12th week of gestation, and it has both phenotype characteristics and genotype characteristics. That is, relatives may have little bit more similarity in their fingerprints than non-relatives, but still there is sufficient information to separate the fingerprints of even identical twins. And in fact, the iris of the eye also is different for identical twins. The second assumption why we have been using fingerprints for such a long time is that of persistence. That means over a period of time, does the fingerprint pattern retain sufficient information that we can still use it for matching or identifying individuals? So in this case, one of the early pioneers in fingerprint matching, Herschel, collected his fingerprint at age 7, age 17, and age 40. And if we use the state-of-the-art matching algorithm, even though the image characteristics or the bit pattern may be slightly different, but we can still identify that these three impressions were made by the same source. So here is now I want to show you a few examples. At the Disney Park in 2006, the Disney Park adopted the use of fingerprints. A ticket is inserted in the turnstile. The person puts the finger on the fingerprint reader, and now that fingerprint is linked to that ticket. Next time you want to use the ticket, it expects the same finger. And the reason why Disney started this is not because of security concern, because they were losing money. People will buy the ticket for the whole day, and then after a half a day, they'll go outside and sell it to somebody else. And Disney did not like that. So now, the first time you use the ticket, you have to provide a finger, and that finger gets linked to that ticket. Next time you want to use the same ticket, same finger is expected. And this has been a system which works day and night, 365 days a year, without too much of a problem. The next project which I'm going to talk about is the largest biometric project in the world. Until now, FBI database of 70 million fingerprints, 70 million subjects in their database, so it's really 700 million fingerprints, is already being surpassed by one order of magnitude by the India's Aadhaar program. So this program started about 5 years ago. In a country like India with a population of about 1.2 billion, half the people do not have any form of identification. So as a result, many of them are deprived of benefits like voting, opening a bank account, and other social services. So India started this program saying we would like to give everybody a 12-digit unique number. And in order to ensure that one person does not have two different numbers, they collected 10 fingerprints and two iris images. They also collect the face image, but the face image is not used for matching. And when they collect this data, they match it against all the individuals who have been issued the 12-digit number. And if you do not reside in the database based on the fingerprint and iris matching, then they'll give you a 12-digit number. And this program has been extremely successful, but you can imagine the magnitude of the program because the people cannot be expected from the villages to come to the cities to provide their biometric data. The data collection team has to go to the villages to collect this data. So far, about 700 million residents of India have received a UID number. In fact, it is not restricted to the citizens of India. If you are working in India, you are living there, you are entitled to go and get a 12-digit number. The biometrics is also quite popular in China. These are some examples of the biometric systems in China. At the Shenzhen-Hong Kong border, Lowu, face and fingerprint verification is used because there are a large number of people who are crossing the border. Last summer, I crossed that border, and it was extremely smooth process where biometric data is collected and you're matched. Face verification was done at the Beijing Olympics to make sure that the person who was issued the ticket is also the person who is entering the Olympic Games. There's a face recognition system at the Beijing airport and iris recognition for coal mine workers. As you probably know, there are a large number of coal mines in China, and often there is an accident. They would like to know who is inside the mine and who is outside the mine. And one way to do that is to do iris matching. Whenever somebody goes inside the mind, the iris image is captured. And when they are coming out, again, the iris image is captured to verify that people have come out of the mind. And in this is a scenario where fingerprint would not work. People's hands are dirty or wearing gloves. Face recognition is not very appropriate. So the choice of iris makes more sense in this scenario. And this work was done at CASIA, Institute of Automation, by Professor Tanti and Hughes Group. So how does a recognition system work? Well, there are two phases of it. You have to enroll yourself. So if the bank is adopting an ATM machine with a biometric, you have to go to the bank, provide your biometric data, so that biometric data is now linked to that particular account. And the data is then stored in a database called the template database. That is, some information is extracted from the fingerprint image or face image and stored as a form of a template. The raw image is not necessarily stored. It's only the law enforcement agencies who store the fingerprint images. Then at the verification time, you do the same thing. You provide your biometric data. It is pre-processed, and then there is a matching comparison which is done between the enrolled data and the data you present at the time of transaction. And then a similarity score is computed. And this is where the difference between the PIN or password-based credentialing and biometric-based credentialing. Your PIN, when you enter a PIN or a password, the answer is, or the decision is, yes or no. But in the case of biometric, because the way you place your finger or present your iris or face, it can be different at different times. You can only measure a similarity in a scale of 0 to 1. So then you have to decide what is the threshold. So if you put a threshold of T, and any time the score is less than T, then you're denied access. If it is greater than T, then you are granted access. So these systems can work in two stages. Two modes of operation: verification, one-to-one matching. You go to the bank and you say, I'm so and so, and they will collect your data and match it to your claimed identity. But very often we do it in one-to-N matching, as in the case of India's Aadhaar program, because we don't trust your claim of identity. So we collected your biometric data and I will match it to everybody in the database to see who you are. So let me now illustrate how we match two fingerprints. Our question is, who made this impression? We have a reference fingerprint. The features which we extract are these minutia points. We establish a correspondence between these two sets of minutia points. And we compute the similarity. If the similarity is greater than certain threshold, we say it is a match. And typically, this picture is showing how we set this threshold. There are two distributions. Horizontal axis is the similarity score. Vertical axis is the frequency. In the blue, I'm showing you imposter match score. When I match my fingerprint with your fingerprint, that score is low. And when I match multiple impressions of my finger, that score is high, and that's in the red. And these systems make some errors because these two distributions, in this case, are overlapping. The better representation we have, less the overlap and less the error rate. So in this case, if we put a threshold of 0.18, we will be making two types of errors, a false accept and a false reject. And you can determine the threshold you put depending on the type of application. So in the case of Disney, they put a threshold so that the false reject is as small as possible because you don't want to upset the customer. But in a high security application, you want the false accept to be as small as possible. So here is an example of true accept. Here is an example of false reject. These two impressions are from the same finger, but the system rejected it, and this is because the amount of overlap between these two is relatively small. Here is an example of true reject, and finally an example of false accept. So these are the four possible cases which can happen. Now let's move on to the face recognition, how face recognition is performed. So we have a probe, which is the query image. and we have a database which is referred to as a gallery. And what we would like to do, given this probe, search this large database and then find which image in the database matches the query. And the challenge is, what is the best set of features and similarity measure? Unlike fingerprints, where the human experts established that the minutiae points can be successfully used for matching, that representation has been used for one gallery. And then you, in this case, we are extracting multi-scale local binary patterns for feature extraction. You move the window around at different parts of the face, you compute the histogram, and then you find the similarity and then make a decision of match or no match based on the whether it exceeds the threshold or not. Again, I'm showing you the genuine score distribution, imposter score distribution, and then I'll show you the four cases. The true accept is the same person. On the image-wise, looks different, but at the feature level, it's the correct decision. This is a false reject. It's the same person, but the score is rather low, so the person is, this is not verified. True reject, and finally, we have a false accept. Somebody else looks like the query image. So now, it's natural to ask, what is the state of the art? Is fingerprint matching and face recognition solved problem, or there's still a lot of work to be done? And in order to illustrate the challenge associated with it, I'm showing this two-dimensional plot. The horizontal axis is the person whose biometric data is being collected. Is he cooperative or not cooperative? And the vertical axis is the imaging condition. And on the one end, we have a constrained imaging condition, and on the other end, we have an unconstrained imaging condition. So a constrained imaging condition would be your photo is taken in a passport office where you're asked to stand at a fixed distance and the lighting is generally uniform. So at the origin, we have a cooperative subject and constrained imaging condition. In this case, we can have 100%, close to 100% accuracy at a very small value of false accept. In the case of fingerprint, false accept is 1 in 10,000, and in the case of face, the false accept is 1 in 1,000. But as we start moving to the other quadrants, on the top we have a cooperative subject but unconstrained imaging condition, still the performance is quite good. As long as the subject is cooperative, he's listening to the instructions in terms of during the imaging, the performance is quite good. But as soon as we have an uncooperative subject, the performance starts falling. And then finally, on the upper right, the last quadrant, this is where the challenge is. We have a unconstrained imaging environment, an uncooperative subject, and the performance is not as good. Now, LFW is a small database of images downloaded from the internet. And the best result which people have recently reported is based on the deep neural network. In fact, the Microsoft Research Asia in Beijing has also worked on it and reported a very high performance. One of the limitations of this database is all the faces can be easily detected. And the next challenge is, can we do face recognition when the face images cannot be detected very well? So this is now I'm going to show you some research opportunities. So first research opportunity is facial aging, if you're interested in face recognition. This is the same person who has been arrested at many different times, and these images come from the police database. First time she was arrested is January 1995, and the last image is 10 years later. And she looks quite different. And the best face matching algorithm gives a very low score, or the scores go down as the time progresses. So how do we take into account the aging of a person in a face recognition system? The second challenge is two different individuals may look alike. In this case, we have identical twins. How do we separate identical twins maybe perhaps we cannot do it on face recognition, or maybe we should look at some moles or other markings on the face, microtexture to separate them. And then father and son, there is a similarity between siblings, and sometimes that makes it challenging for a face recognition system. In the case of fingerprint, the challenge is how do we match a partial fingerprint called latent fingerprint found at the crime scene? So first thing we have to do is to find the region of interest, that is separate the friction-rich pattern from the background. This is called the segmented and enhanced latent fingerprint. And then finally find out which portion of a rolled fingerprint in the database this partial fingerprint comes from. So I told you that you cannot do face recognition unless you can detect the face. So this is an example of a scene in a crowd, and we would like to find individuals in this image. And the best face detector which we have designed can only detect, well, it does a reasonable job, but it doesn't find all the faces. And so one of the big challenges in face recognition is, can we find faces? I mean, if I were to ask you to label all the faces, you'll be able to tell more faces than what this detector has recognized. So this is a big challenge. The next thing is face recognition in video. The video surveillance cameras are popping up everywhere. It is estimated that there are 20 million surveillance cameras in China. I'm sure there are more, but this is the statistic I got. There are 3 million surveillance cameras in Beijing and Shanghai. And right now, these surveillance cameras are simply recording the data. There is no intelligence in them in the sense that if you're looking for somebody, you're looking for some activity so that police can be sent there, there is no way for them to know. Or if there's a traffic jam, so they could adjust the traffic lights. There's not that much intelligence built into it. And so this is the next challenge in terms of video processing. And I want to illustrate, this is the, as you probably, some of you may recall, there was a bombing during the Boston Marathon on April 15, 2013. There were two brothers who were responsible for it. And these are the two brothers walking, one with the white cap and one with the dark cap. And so the police, or the FBI in this case, extracted the two frames of the suspects. And then we did a matching of these two suspects based on the photos in the database. The older brother was in a police database because he was arrested once. And the younger brother's photo was on a social media website. We could easily recognize the younger brother, but the older brother could not be recognized. And the reason is wearing the dark glasses, so the eyes cannot be detected. And if eyes cannot be detected, it becomes very difficult for the current matching algorithms to do the alignment and normalization. So the next challenge is really, how do we do face matching when some of the landmarks, important landmarks, are missing from the face? So here is a photo of a suspect recorded at a convenience store during a robbery attempt. The face image is of low quality, and that's one of the limitations of the current surveillance cameras. The face images are of very low resolution. And in this particular case, there is no way we can do face recognition based on the current state-of-the-art algorithms. But what you notice is the tattoo on the arm. So this we call a soft biometrics. It's not a unique identifying characteristics, but the presence of some body markings can help identify who the person is. And as the use of the tattoos is growing, this topic is receiving a lot of attention. So this, just the use of the tattoos is not just for finding criminals. This mother who has four identical six-year-old twins, she was having a lot of difficulty. The school principal and the teachers were complaining that they can't tell who the individual boys were. The father of the boys was also having difficulty. So she gave a tattoo of the haircut with the markings 1, 2, 3, 4, so that the boys could be separated. The other important topic in biometrics, I told you the assumption number two is persistence, but nobody has scientifically shown that fingerprints are persistent in terms of the matching accuracy. And so we are studying this problem. Can we actually demonstrate using a formal statistical test of hypothesis that fingerprint matching accuracy does not degrade over time? Then what is the capacity of a biometric trait? I mean, there's a lot of interest in face recognition these days. Most of the research groups are working on face recognition, Google, Microsoft, Facebook. But nobody has addressed this question. In this case, can we recognize all the 1.3 billion faces in China? Because the current databases which people are using to report their experiments is rather limited. And unless we can address this, we would not know this question, is whether biometrics can be scaled up to a couple of orders of magnitude. Like any security system, biometric systems also have some limitations. And there are two major limitations. Number one, somebody can modify the template in the database. So the template has to be stored in a secure way. And the second is the biometric which is presented at the reader could be a spoof. So in our laboratory, what we are doing is we are taking a 2D fingerprint image. We can map it onto a 3D finger surface, so we create what is called a 3D virtual spoof. And then we can take a state-of-the-art 3D printer and print the spoof, and then put that spoof onto the fingerprint reader and get a 2D image of the spoof. And now the question is, can we tell the difference between 2D fingerprint, original 2D fingerprint image, and the 2D image of the spoof? In terms of the matching performance, we cannot tell the difference between them. So that means we must use some other inherent property of the fingerprint formation process to tell whether the finger's impression, whether the object which is being put on the fingerprint reader is a real fingerprint or a fake fingerprint. And finally, I would like to just give some, pose this question, where is biometrics heading? Biometric recognition will be everywhere, online payment, airports, train stations, network access. I mean, there's no question about it that biometrics will be pervasive and we'll be seeing in our daily lives more and more. The recognition will be made not just based on the body traits, but also on what you are doing, so context information. So it's not just based on your body traits, but also whether... So in the case of mobile phone, for example, how you're holding the phone, how you swipe the phone, how you type on the keyboard, these are all very important cues to tell some information about yourself. The challenge is to recognize persons in unconstrained situations, non-cooperative subjects in unconstrained imaging conditions. The issue of cooperative subjects in constrained imaging conditions is fairly under control. The second challenge is to prevent spoof attacks and to secure the user templates. And this gets connected to the user privacy. I mean, how do you protect the data which is stored? When you create a password, you are the only ones who knows it, because the way it is stored, it can be called a one-way transformation. Can we also store the biometric data in a one-way, using a one-way transformation? That's the big challenge, without sacrificing the performance. And finally, one of the topics we are interested in is biometrics for a lifetime. Namely, child is born, can we collect biometric data, and then that data remains invariant for the rest of the lifetime. So here I'm showing in a clinic in Africa, one of the projects we are working on funded by the Gates Foundation is to track babies during the vaccination purposes, to make sure that they get all the appropriate booster shots for polio vaccine in this case. And on the right, we are showing an image, which is what traditionally done in many countries to make sure that you don't vote again is apply some kind of an ink on the finger, which lasts for a few days. But do we really have to do that? Can we sort of recognize a person using some measurements for the lifetime? Thank you very much. With that, I'll stop.